You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage. I'm your host, Andy Bush. I want to thank everyone for tuning into today's show. Now, you can get the show's podcast on iTunes. Just type in Engage with Andy Bush, and it's Bush like the beer, not the president, so there's a C in there to find it. You can also get the show on andrewbush.com by clicking on the podcast button at the top of the homepage. Now, today we're pleased to welcome back on the show Greg Valier from Potomac Research Group. You know, I love having Greg on the show because he gives us something very unusual, which is an unbiased view of what's happening in D.C. Greg, welcome back.
I think I am biased, Andy. I'm a cynic.
and an ardent one at that, I would say. An ardent cynic. All right, we'll cut you some slack there.
Okay.
Well, listen, we're coming back, charging out of the gate, you know, in the race to finish the midterm elections this fall. But obviously, Congress is still going to be on recess until next week. But what's your big call on whether the Senate stays Democratic?
I think you'd have to say if the election were held today, the Republicans would gain control. The magic number is six. I think the Republicans are going to hold on to all of their seats, including Mitch McConnell's and the seat in Georgia. Those are two close races.
Really? I saw McConnell was ahead, but not by much, right? So
yeah,
he's really come around recently.
It's a really conservative state. I think Kentucky will stay Republican. But then, man, you look at the Democrat side, and you've got seven or eight seats that look shaky, including three that are virtually gone. So, yeah, I think the odds slightly favor the Republicans taking the Senate. Now, could something change between now and Election Day? Maybe if we got a string of really great economic numbers, you know, non-farm payrolls, GDP, whatever, that might change things. But I think most people's attitudes are pretty much set in concrete by now.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I always talk about the Magnificent Seven Senate races. Now, these are the Democratic states, or these are states with Democrat incumbents, that the states were won by Mitt Romney in the last election. And this is, I want to say San Diego, but South Dakota, West Virginia, Louisiana, North Carolina, Arkansas, Montana, and Alaska. I think you were mentioning before South Dakota, West Virginia, Montana are locks. Those races are almost double digits. But what about the rest? I mean, Louisiana, obviously, that's an interesting race with Mary Landrieu down there. Really, it's neck and neck, and it's so key because she heads up a key committee in the Senate, which is the Energy Services, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal. She's quite good in that subject, but she's got a problem, Andy. She doesn't live in Louisiana. Minor detail.
What?
And we've seen in the last few elections, Dick Lugar in Indiana and some other senators have been hurt by the fact that they don't live in their home state anymore. And Landrieu doesn't live in New Orleans. It's sort of a sham. So that hurts her. So if she were to lose, that's four. So the Republicans would just need two more. And as you say, there are some states like Arkansas, Alaska, that also look really shaky right now.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that the Democrat in Alaska has held on as long as he's had as far as being ahead of the polls. But I guess the bruising primary race there was not helpful for the Republicans, that's for sure.
No. I'll throw out a really bizarre theory to you, and that is I've talked to Democrats on the Hill in the last month or two who say, and I don't think it's just, you know, bravado, you know, we don't care if we lose. If we lose the Senate and both houses are Republican, Hillary will have a foil to run against. She can claim that Congress is still dysfunctional, even though the Republicans control both houses. That may be sort of wishful thinking by the Democrats. I think they'd like to keep the Senate. But right now, I'd say the odds favor the Republicans taking control.
Well, there's all sorts of things that can happen, obviously, if the Democrats lose control of the Senate. And you and I have talked about this many times, and one of the key things, obviously, is through the budget reconciliation process, Republicans can pass all sorts of things, including things on Obamacare, but also on tax reform and other key issues.
Keystone pipeline.
I was just going to say energy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that they'll present to the president, and he will, and his party will look very poorly if he doesn't sign.
Yeah, he may be forced to do a lot of veto threats. I think that's possible. There are so many interesting issues in the next 2 years, and I understand that some are probably hopelessly gridlocked, like immigration. But the one next year that really intrigues me the most is tax reform.
Yes.
We've seen through this issue of corporate inversions with Burger King going to Canada. I mean, to me, the flashing red light here is that we need tax reform. And I do think in the House, Paul Ryan is going to move a bill. I think he could get a bill passed by the 4th of July next year. And then I think the Senate, if it is controlled by Republicans, could pass a bill as well. So then the issue is, does the president just veto anything that comes to him on tax reform, or does he cut a deal?
Well, so far we know he hasn't cut any deals. And to your point, though, on these tax aversions, we know that Treasury Secretary Liu is going to make a major speech on this on September 8th, so we know this is a front burner issue. The other thing too, Greg, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and this is what surprises me about you saying that Democrats don't want to or don't care if they lose the Senate, but I think that's just whistling past the graveyard, because one of the key things, or two really key pieces of regulation that are going into effect shortly is, of course, the energy one related to CO2 emissions, which the head of the EPA is running around trying to drum up support for. But also there's talk about bringing up ozone regulation and redoing that. So those are two really wonderful lightning rods for the Republicans to really energize the base in the fall, and I think they have such tremendous implications for U.S. businesses across the country.
Absolutely, and I think this is an area where Mitch McConnell is quite adamant that he resents the intrusiveness that he feels that EPA brings to his state and coal. So if the Republicans do manage to take the Senate, McConnell, I think, will become a major antagonist of the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense to me. Well, let me ask you about on the Republican side of the Senate, right? Are there any other races that you're kind of keeping a close eye on besides McConnell's?
Just the Georgia one. I think other than that, the Republicans will keep all of their seats. Michelle Nunn, the daughter of Sam Nunn, is running a pretty good campaign. I've seen polls in the last few days that show it close to being tied. But like Kentucky, Georgia is a very conservative state. And I, if forced to bet, I would probably bet that she would lose to this fellow named Perdue. So I think there's a chance the Republicans don't lose any of their seats.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the key, right? They've got to hold on to every single one, and then they got to go pick up six. But you know, it certainly begs the question, you know, do the Republicans really want it? I mean, obviously they want to take control of the Senate because they can do a lot of really good things. But and you talked about tax reform. But my question back to you is this: is it going to be the tax reform that you want, given who's Senator number 51 or who's Senator 52?
Sure.
You know, and that if you get some very, you know, more centrist Republicans, not that that necessarily is a bad thing, but depending on what state they come from, they're the 51st vote to pass that thing, and they're going to get all sorts of stuff stuffed in there.
Absolutely. I'd say two things quickly. I really do think this debate over these corporate inversion deals has changed the atmosphere. I think everyone in both parties agrees we got to do something to our tax code. I mean, let's face it, Andy, if Canada is a tax haven, something's wrong with our tax code, wouldn't you say?
And well,
And the other thing I'd say real quickly about the Senate races is that it is a little troubling to see the Republicans not standing for a heck of a lot. I mean, they could use this. They could say, hey, we won the Senate, we kept the House, and we stood for this, 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 this. So far, all I've seen basically is them just complaining and moaning about Barack Obama. That'll probably be enough, but it would have been a little nicer to see them have an aggressive agenda.
Well, let's just really quickly run through what the Republicans are going to be running on and what the Democrats are going to be running on. And correct me if I'm wrong, from, you know, I live in the state of Illinois, so I've been seeing a lot of the local government ads run, or I should governor ads run, with Quinn going against Rauner, and it seems like it's all on minimum wage and, you know, fat cats and that kind of stuff. Of course, Rauner's a billionaire, but I mean, that seems to be the mantra, and immigration, obviously, for the Democrats. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say if I could synthesize it down to one issue, it's jobs. And to this extent, the Republicans' argument is that this administration's agenda costs jobs because of uncertainty and excessive regulations. The Democrats' argument is that we stand for the working people with minimum wage hike, with unemployment benefits. So it ironically, both parties talk about jobs. Of course, they both have very different prescriptions.
Yeah, and income inequality clearly is one of the bigger ones for the Democrats. And a lot of the research we've seen that's since the financial crisis occurred in 2007, we just haven't seen the middle income people see, obviously, the improvement that you would want them to see. And a lot of that has to do with the stock market. But obviously, Piketty's book that came out has brought this to the fore. So I would imagine there'll be a lot more of that going forward. I don't know.
If there's one issue, just real quickly, I think it's the fact that purchasing power for ordinary Americans, middle-class Americans, has not come back since 08 or 09. And we're not in recession. Unemployment looks better. A lot looks better. Stock market looks better. But for most Americans, the purchasing power they have now, adjusted for inflation, is nothing like it was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, and you know that's an item that the Republicans could run on, obviously, as well, because that's what would be really important for them to understand. You know, it's interesting, and it's funny how when you look at these issues, talking about things like tax inversions, and it's such a funny subject because the Democrats run on it in the sense that, or they take the stance that this is unpatriotic. Right, and that these companies are leaving, and they certainly scared the bejesus out of Walgreens here in Illinois because they didn't leave. Right now, I don't know what they told them, like they would lose all their Medicare contracts. But this is something that the president's going to address to some extent in the fall as well, after Lou's speech on the 8th. But there's executive orders that are going to continue to come. Those I don't think they're going to help the Democrats that much, though.
No, I don't. A couple of things I'd say, Andy. Number one, I think the level of demagoguery on this issue is going to really increase. And, I mean, I understand that what they're doing is controversial, but it's not against the law. I think these companies have an obligation to their shareholders to maximize their profits and their stock price. I guess the other thing I'd say about the Democrats is that their argument really lost some credibility and momentum when Warren Buffett was identified with this Burger King deal. I mean, here's the patron saint of tax fairness, Warren Buffett, who's part of this deal. So it makes it difficult for the Democrats to say this is immoral or unpatriotic when Warren Buffett is doing it.
I love it. He's financing it. That's the best part of it, right?
Yep.
All right, well, let me switch gears here. Greg Valliere and his research team, I love one of the things they do, and they did it back in May, and now they just came out, I think this week, Greg, with your rundown of your top 10 2016 GOP hopefuls. And what I'd like to do right now is just what we did back in May, which is run down the top 10. And if you're ready to go, all right, let's start with number 10.
Okay.
Mike Pence, he's unchanged from last time at number 10.
Not a household name, but he has a very unique qualification. He is acceptable to all wings of the party. He's the governor of Indiana, good guy. I think he is a good shot to be a running mate.
Yeah, okay, and here's the big surprise. Number 9, Scott Walker, is previously number 2.
Yeah, I put him back there. I mean, I am not sure if there's some big hanging offense, if he's committed some horrible crime with his fundraising story, but it certainly has hurt his momentum, and the New York Times and others have really gone after him. And now, all of a sudden, Scott Walker's got to worry about getting reelected.
Yeah, it's going to be close. Yeah,
it's going to be a close race. Yep.
Definitely going to be close. Now, see, number 8, you've got Rick Santorum. Now, he was number 3. I thought that was way too high, so I'm glad to see you have him back at number 8.
Yeah, well, I put him high because he won 11 primaries last time, and he has tremendous support among the religious right. But he's been pretty quiet. I think he'll run. But, yeah, 8 felt about right for him.
Okay, and then number 7's Paul Ryan. I don't think that's changed, right? He's still there.
No, you know, Ryan, we could do this exercise a year from now, and Ryan could be number 1. If he gets a tax bill through the House, that could be a tremendous feather in his cap.
Yeah, and it'll be tough. I think it'll be tough because there's going to be a lot of horse trading that goes on with that, as you know. But here's a guy who's a horse that I like the most. I mean, I think he still remains my number one favorite guy, and that's Chris Christie, and you got him at number six, unchanged.
I like the guy. He's fascinating. He's fun to watch. He's an original. But my gut feeling, Andy, is that there's more to come.
Yeah.
That there's more revelations, and number one. And number two, he's a Northeast moderate. And you could ask President Giuliani how that worked out in the Republican Party. It doesn't work with him.
Guy, it sounded so good there for a while. All right, so Number five, previously number nine, but now up to five is Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I'm not on medication. I've not had a drink today, but I have to tell you, I think the day's early. But I do think that Mitt Romney is hearing over and over. I mean, all these guys live in an echo chamber. People adore them and tell them how great they are. And I think Romney keeps hearing he could do it. He could win this time. And his disavowals of running, to me, have not sounded all that definitive. I think the door is open at least a crack.
Yeah, and then you've got now previously number eight. Now you've got this guy way higher, Ted Cruz. I think you're influenced way too much by what just happened recently with him, which
maybe.
Is his appearance at the Coke Festival, as I like to call it.
Right, but the thing is, Andy, the base loves this guy. I mean, he throws red meat. I think he'll do well in Iowa in the early primaries. I think if he's on the ticket, the Republicans would be lucky to win a dozen states.
Yeah.
But the base likes him a lot, and he's definitely running. The fact that he was born in Calgary is not dissuading him.
I think it makes him a Texan, obviously, as much
sure.
as any other country would. All right, number three at Rand Paul, previously number four.
He's had a pretty good summer. I think that, he's widening his base of popularity.
He hasn't written anything that he's plagiarized recently.
No. He's, some very influential Jewish activists in the Republican Party who are big donors don't like his position on Israel, and he's got to nuance that a little bit more. His isolationism worries people, but this is a guy who does not sound like a traditional politician, and that's a big part of his appeal.
All right, at number two, and previously at number one, my favorite vice presidential pick is Marco Rubio.
Yeah, I think he's still in the mix. He's been very wishy-washy and flip-flopped on immigration.
Yeah.
But he's a talent, and I think that he comes from a state, obviously, that's crucial. I think he'll be in the mix right up until the finish.
All right, and the one that when no one wants to hear, number one, Jeb Bush.
Just, shoot me now if it's Hillary against Bush. Good Lord.
Clinton Bush!
I have a friend who says, people with really old cars won't even have to change their bumper stickers.
I was just thinking that. I'll bring out my T-shirts.
Yeah, Bush, Clinton. But I think if Jeb Bush wants it, I think people in the party have to acknowledge that he's got the best chance against Hillary. I mean, that's the name of the game. You want to win. The issue, of course, Andy, is does he want to run? He's got family issues. He knows that activists in the party have issues with him. If he wants to run, I think he'll be the nominee.
All right, Greg Valier from Potomac Research, our election tour guide for the fall. Thanks for coming on.
A real pleasure.
All right, buddy. We'll take a break, and then I'll give you my views on what all this means. You're listening to Engage.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Does your business, like many, face obstacles to becoming successful? Would you love to have an open forum of entrepreneurial ideas and best practices brought to you each week? Tune in for The Second Stage with hosts Brendan Anderson and Jeffrey Kadlec. We'll spotlight entrepreneurs and growing companies that are creating a vibrant economic base, as well as addressing some of the obstacles that could be standing in the way of your success. Listen Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.